In this month's episode, we interviewed Yabing Wang. Yabing is a Chief Information Security Officer, or CISO, at HEB, a privately held supermarket chain based in San Antonio, Texas. And it's not just a supermarket chain, it's a bit of a Texas icon. In fact, people have been known to do maternity photo shoots and wedding engagement pictures at their local HEB stores. The people of Texas love HEB, and HEB loves them right back. During the pandemic, HEB donated $3 million to community organizations supporting those in need and to coronavirus research. And when it comes to natural disasters in Texas, like the Texas freeze and Hurricane Harvey, communities have come to rely on HEB's resilience to open its doors and serve those in need. It's one of the largest employers in Texas. HEB employs over 100,000 people through more than 340 stores. So building and maintaining the technology that powers this $25 billion giant is no easy task. In 2021, cybercrime is predicted to inflict $6 trillion in damages globally. Reacting to this, businesses are getting serious about protecting themselves. So in April of this year, HEB brought in its first CISO, Yabing, to focus on protecting HEB from these cyber threats. She's a first-generation Chinese-American and has traversed a fast-paced career to be one of the few executive women holding a seat in the cybersecurity space. Here she talks candidly about how she did it and opens up about the importance of leading from a place of authenticity.
You've spent half your life in China and half your life in the U.S. So were you the first in your family to come to the U.S.?
Yes. Well, the only caveat is my dad was here in 1980 for 2 years when the first wave of Chinese government is sending the professors to come for further advancement. So he was here, 80 to 81 for 2 years. And then he went back. So
was there always a plan for you to come to the U.S. for your education?
No, actually, it's interesting that because my dad, most people will think, oh, that'll give you the trigger, you know, come here earlier than others. Actually, no, I was not even thinking about it because my background was in philosophy, right? You know, either you do philosophy in China or, you know, most of philosophers we study that's in Europe, not really America per se. So I did not think about coming to the United States until my husband, you know, we start dating and he wanted to come over and I said, okay, I'll go. I'm flexible. So, and that's how we start to plan what's next. And, you know, frankly, I still started when I came to the United States, started in liberal arts before I transitioned to computer science.
Hmm. Where in China is your family from?
Sichuan, the spicy food place. I never be able to pronounce correctly using American accent. What do they do? Sichuan. I don't know how they pronounce it. Sichuan.
Sichuan. Sichuan. Sichuan.
That's where I came from. Yeah. So I came from a place pretty hot in summer and with the spicy food. Yeah. So San Antonio, probably similar to that. Not like Chicago.
Is it true that you're supposed to eat more spicy foods during the hot weather or the cold weather?
Supposed to be cold weather, but a lot of people enjoy it that in hot weather too, because it's humid, they feel like the spicy food will kind of like dissolve that. So even though, you know, you will see this kind of very funny thing that in China, I mean, maybe old days, not right now, summertime, 9 p.m., the guys wear, you know, they have their shirts off, drinking beer on the street and then eating spicy food like hot pot. And that's a thing in China, well, in my hometown in particular. So
you got your start at Netscape and then you spent 15 years at Allstate.
Yep.
And then about every 3 years, you were making this transition to the next level until you became a chief security architect, right? And then I'm kind of fast forwarding a little bit because there just was this continual climb into the executive ranks. And that's the piece that's really, you know, when you think back at your first entree into the executive ranks, what do you think kind of made you stand apart and be recognized as having that executive potential?
Maybe a couple of things. I know the first one is very, very critical. That is, I was in Allstate doing security for 15 years, but I entered 2002, about 2006, 3-4 years along, I was promoted to a level that it's individual contributor, but it's a high level in a way. At Allstate, there were 12 of us, and I was the first woman entering into that circle. And I still remember the guy says, oh, now we have a color. And they don't mean the color of my color, but more the woman coming in.
Diversity, right?
Yes, diversity color. And the reason I mention that is because my CISO at the time was a woman. And I think in particular, she pushed me up. Because I think she really helped call out to say, hey, we need more diversity. We need others. And let's identify the candidates. Let's look and go beyond guys. So that, I want to mention that. I think that help, assistance made a huge difference for my career. That's number one. And number two, talking about the growth into the executives, I would think a big part is this confidence. And you can call that executive presence. And before, I don't know how to translate executive presence into concrete things to work on. I still remember, you know, a long time ago, you know, I was participating in a woman leadership kind of a one-year program. And one of the things I was talking to my boss at the time is to work on the executive presence. And don't know what does that mean, frankly. Is that communication? Is that whatever? We don't know. And what I figured out at the end is really the way you show your confidence. And I think a lot of women I saw, particularly Asian women, we didn't matter how much we know. Maybe one, a lot of us are introvert, or a lot of us are impacted by this Asian culture or a Chinese culture that, hey, there are three level above me, you know, they are the authorities, therefore I need to listen, I need to respect, I better shut up, let them talk, right? Mm-hmm. The more we do that, I think the more constraint we put on our end. And we started to meet on my side, I start to lose myself. Right. I become the one trying to fit into somebody's model or fit into a culture. And I kind of lost who I am. By the time I realize I want to be myself, that's where I start to gain the confidence.
So that's very pivotal, because we need to understand, and the audience wants to understand, what the differences are in Asia, where you grew up working in the workplace versus US workplace. Right. What are the cultural differences that you faced in the workplace?
I'm not able to say a lot because I did not really work in China. So what I had my bachelor's degree, master's degree, and I came over. So I really, my career is really in US, right? So I probably not able to compare a lot from that end.
But I think it was culturally, right? Like culturally just growing up in the Chinese background, like you said, there is this expectation around respecting the hierarchy.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And it sounds like, you know, that's kind of how you first were approaching things when you came to work here in the U.S.
Yep. You know, my personality, I have, like, if I call that top five strength, one of them is learning, right? I'm flexible. I try to learn. I try to modify. I try to become a better self. So I came in with the mentality of I really want to fit in into the American culture, into the corporate culture. But actually, why I said that, there's something behind this saying, because the back of my mind is I want them to accept me. I wish them recognize me, promote me, right? It's more of like, I want them to view me in their eyes. So from that angle that I start to say, hey, don't talk too much. Otherwise, they may feel like I don't know this, or they don't, they won't like me they won't promote me. I piss this person off. I blah, blah, blah. You know, it's the more I be quiet, the more, you know, I really cannot show, right, what is my strength, what I can do. Is one day when one of my mentor called that out, he was talking about himself, not really, you know, trying to teach me anything. He was telling his story about, he's asking himself, so what? And I was thinking, you're right. If they don't like me, so what? If they don't promote me, so what? So in other words, when I start to think, what exactly is the consequence of if I speak up, right? What's the consequence if I do this way, take a risk, do this way? I lose my job?
Was that counter, though, to your identity as a Chinese woman?
No, because I think what really unveil here is I was not doing myself. I couldn't get my opinion out. I was more, actually, I'm more open, right? Extrovert, but I can do the same thing or, you know, among peers. Feel free, that's myself. But when you throw me as a senior manager, when you put me in front of all VPs, senior VPs, I feel like, well, better not talk. But that was not me. So I think the big difference for me is to figure out who you really are and be yourself. Maybe there are people introvert, they just want to be that way. But I was very open, right? Very extrovert, but I became the one that trying to be a better one just in their eyes, not a better one from my perspective.
So yeah, Bing, would you say you were coming across, you know, fighting maybe cultural differences to get to that point? Like you're saying, maybe as an Asian American woman, I have to respect the hierarchy and I shouldn't speak out. I think that's what Shredda was alluding to, versus none of that matters and I'm going to speak up.
Yes, yes, yes. I would say that at the end, I mean, culture put something on you, but you could grow up in different culture, but figure out who you are, be yourself is most critical part. Mm. I think only when I'm be myself at that point, I really have the confidence to do more. And if I do it wrong, I'm okay with it. I can change it next time. I take the lesson from it, right? So I give myself more buffer to take risks.
Mm, and probably more grace to make mistakes.
Yes, yes. Go ahead.
I would say on the opposite side, Yabing, how has culture been a forte for you in your ascent to your success?
I would say, how do I say this? Be...
There's so many strengths of being a Chinese American.
Right,
Sichuan.
I would say that a big part of that is accept others, meaning that, you know, Chinese has the long history, right? In their long history, you have so many quoted countries within China. Everybody is different. And China has also 50 above like minorities, right? It's that embrace of others, other diversity. To me, that made a huge difference on me. That's why I was very flexible, right? You know, flexible, open to different ideas, flexible, open to accept my friends with a different personality, different style. My friends, you can see that they are not just one kind. They're all different kinds. I think that gave me a lot of advantage. And that also helps when you go to company to company. Every company has a different culture. They have a different leadership style. They have a different corporate culture. And of course, you run different people with different skill sets. I think that helps me a lot. Another one is more of modest, right? Meaning that not self-oriented or ego-oriented. Well, you know what? Whether that one is just Chinese culture or not, I may not be able to conclude that, because I think American culture has that too. Is I think when you don't put yourself as a center, but put a bigger good, right, greater good, that pursue that piece, I think the career path actually becomes easier.
Let me go back to something you talked about people in your life that have kind of helped you along your career. Yeah. And you talked about your mentor. It's such an important piece when we talk to women like you who, it's not just about the technical capability. It's also about the relationships along the way.
Yes.
So when you think back, mm-hmm. who were those important people that you met along the way that helped you carve out that path that you are on today?
There are many people. I think I named two just now. The woman, the CISO who promoted me, that's a big one. I still kept a friendship with her, even though she retired a long time ago. And the VP who taught me, ask yourself, you know, so what? Yep, he is a CEO right now for a technology company. I have another mentor that once, actually point out two things that I always rethink of those two points. The second conversation that I still remember is talking about the CISO. So entering into cyber in 2002, I was looking at my five-year plan, you know, what I could become in the future. And CISO was the plan. And along the way, I start to realize, you know, there's so much hacking from China and Russia. Whenever we're in the meetings talking about threats, everybody talking about China, and you can see their eyes kind of like looking at me like that in the room.
They're
right?
looking at you. They're looking at you specifically.
Yeah, but they're not directly looking at me, right? They will just, they realize one of the people in the room look like a Chinese. Mm. And they will just like glink like that. So around those conversations, I start to question. I say, is there any company really would put the security in a Chinese hand, right? It's like, so I start to question, maybe this, you know, maybe this is not achievable, you know? So he was coaching me, how do you know that? How do you know that? You put this on yourself. You imagine this becomes a constraint. And if you give up, that means you actually drag yourself down. Mm. So back to the thing, and I think, you know, people generally talking about is glass ceiling or not. I think sometimes because we put the glass ceiling on it because we don't think we can get there.
You know, you talk again a lot about just knowing yourself. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's not like Asian discrimination is new. It's happened throughout the history of our country. And you talked about your own kind of experiences where they would kind of mention something and you wondered about whether or not there was a future for yourself being a Chinese woman in cybersecurity. Now, what would you say to people that are faced with Asians that are facing that discrimination right now in the workplace, given what you know and the experiences you've had?
I have to use this word again, but really is speak up. I think we don't probably have the courage to speak up. Be there, talk through it. You know, sometimes, you know, on the other side, there may be really there's a hate, but sometimes maybe there's just a misunderstanding. They don't know you. They saw something like, you know, when they saw all the hackings from China, they look, all the Chinese are hackers, right? You know, it's just sometimes it's a misunderstanding. They don't know you as an individual. But whenever they get to know as an individual, they forget you are from different cultures. So I will encourage people to speak up. It may take a while, but ask yourself, so what if you speak up?
So along the journey to becoming the chief information security officer for HEB, so you came to the U.S. married, but you had a child or you had children?
I have two kids.
Two kids. Okay. So how did you balance the commitments of work to the demands of marriage and two children?
I have to say I'm lucky from a couple of angles. One is I probably belong to fewer people that are very energetic. Maybe one of the reasons I'm very sporty. I do a lot of sports. I squeeze time to do sports. And along the way from that, I also have an advantage. I can multitask. I do things very effectively. So give you an example that, you know, when I cook, I plan very quickly in my head what I will do. I probably already fire my stove while it's warming up. I'm cutting my vegetables, you know, while I'm cooking, I'm cutting my next one, right? So on the side of cooking, I'm already washing the dishes. By the time I finish cooking, I'm done with the kitchen. You know, it's like, you know, I think that's a gift from the God. So I'm good from that. So that's one angle. The second one is that I think I'm lucky to have a very good husband that very supportive. He is in finance. He works for another big company, but his schedule is a little more flexible than me. So when we run into things with the kids, you know, he will do more during the weekdays. I will do more during the weekend. So we support each other very well. That's why I call that lucky. Maybe not a lot of, you know, husbands will do the same as my husband.
So yeah, you are a very high caliber woman. It sounds like a power couple. It's with such high caliber marriages, and how do you sustain something like that in a marriage?
I think the one we think work out most is we communicate a lot. We communicate a lot. I think we share the similar value systems, the way we look at the world, the way we look at a career, the way we look at a family and others, pretty similar. If there's anything come up, we always talk. I think that helps. And when I saw other, you know, friends or couples run into the, you know, marriage issues or any kind of argument, I think it's like, you know, when they run into things, they don't want to talk. They have their friends. They turn to their friends to do anything. So I think that helps. And maybe another part is somehow personality-wise, we both, you know, matching away. So, oh, another thing I think is really, really good is particularly my husband, he's very humorous. And compared with a lot of women, I'm too. So when you are very humorous, you make big things small, small things disappear, right? So does that make sense? The way I said it's in Chinese. In Chinese, you say, you know, if you can make bigger things, you can make the watermelon a sesame to disappear, your problem goes away. So in a way, you know, our life becomes much easier because we look at things very light, very light. And I bet both of us came from philosophy background that helped.
Pulling that philosophical, that philosophy, yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because I think that 7 years being in philosophy, it really shaped the way for me to look things differently, right? I look things from different perspective. I can look things far. I can look things broad. I think those one really, I would call them make people different. So there are smart people, there are wise people, right? And I was telling my son on this, I believe the statement that is everybody can identify problems, everybody. And the smart people can solve the problems, but the wise people know what problem to solve, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that along the journey that both of us too, and that we also train the kids, is not only you're smart, or you may not be the smartest one. So what? Try to become the wise one, right? The wise one difference is the way we look at things, right?
So when you talk about your kids, did you make it a point though to, because this comes up with, especially with high powered, you know, women like yourself, moving up into the executive ranks, one of the reasons we see kind of women taper off before they hit the executive ranks is kind of looking at, well, do I lean in, you know, lean into to going up the ladder, or do I, you know, what do I do about my kids? I want to have kids. I mean, how did, and you talk about you had a lot of energy, so you were able to multitask. Were there other resources that you had to tap into to support you as well?
Everything. I think one big thing I learned, right, like I said, is when you are not self-centric, right, there are a lot of things become easier. One of the things from this point is you start to realize you cannot do everything, right? You got to rely on others, rely on relationships to help. Like the example I just said, without my husband, I don't think I can be there, right? You know, that's just one example. But along the way, so you got to seek help from your coworkers, friends, mentors within your company, outside of company. I can tell you, I'm not shy to ask for help. Mm. So I think that is something really helped along the way. That's why, I mean, I can tell you one of the reasons I like HEB or decide to join HEB is it matched my philosophy. That is, looking at myself, right? Looking back, my path, there are so many people helped me and I want to do more about giving back, right? That is a philosophy HEB has. They do a lot of community work. They help a lot of people.
Between the Texas freeze that we encountered earlier this year to the massive supply chain disruptions. And I asked this question because, again, because of the pandemic, there's so much stress that people are on, you know, Asian community is under. And so when I think about that stress, and then I also think about just your role specifically with the Texas freeze and then the massive supply chain disruptions we experienced and the demands that the pandemic brought up, I imagine that was probably a fairly intense time for you in your role. How did you manage through that?
First one, believe there's nobody perfect. I'm not perfect. I mean, I'm telling myself I'm not perfect. So therefore that there's something I can do, but not everything. So just realize that you're not perfect. And even though you do everything quoted that you can, hackers are still out there. They will find a way to come in, right? So it is more of like really trying to figure out what we can do now. And in particular, that the things I was talking to everybody is making sure we know our environment, we know our system, and making sure we can react quick, we can respond quick, we can recover quick, right? And we still need to do a lot of protection, we still need to do a lot of controls in front, but the back end side, we still need to do more. So me as a new person in the environment, I also need to understand a lot of things. So it is a very stressful time for everybody. But to the point, I always tell myself, complaining or being stressful cannot solve anything. And so it's more of, you know, figure out a way to do something and figure out a way to connect to the stuff that people never seen it together. So there will be ways. There will be solutions.
Do you have any vices that you like to kind of fall back on to help you manage stress? Maybe eat some good Szechuan?
For managing stress, you know what I do? I know everybody was kind of like questioning me. I squeeze time to do exercise. Mm-hmm. I play badminton. I play golf. I squeeze time to meet with my friends. One thing my philosophy too, right? You know, I view the learning as a 70-20-10 rule. 70% you learn on the job. 10% you learn maybe formal training. And usually when you get this time, you don't have much time to do a lot of formal training other than we read a lot of articles, we read a lot of stuff. But 20% of time, to me, the learning is from the conversations. So I keep in touch with my friends, my coworkers, my peers, you know, people in the security industry, people in other industry. I keep having conversations with them. I learn from there as well. And to me, that is a learning opportunity. Number two, that's also, you know, stress relief way for me.
On that note, I love your philosophy of giving back and having a community that helped you get to that point. I know at Allstate, you're one of the co-founders of the Asian American Network.
Yes.
A very
yes.
strong advocate for women in tech and cybersecurity.
Yes.
So what do you see could potentially be holding Asian American women back from securing top roles in technology?
I think still to that point is that, you know, find themselves and then keep learning. I think that when they do those two things, I think that Asian woman, particularly in technology, will gain confidence. You know, I think and then definitely break some barrier, like, you know, maybe in the back of our head, I have to know 100% before I speak up, right? Don't need that. You do not need to be perfect. And you are not, nobody is. So by realizing that when you have an idea, don't care it's right or wrong, speak up, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's still the combination of, you know, do I feel bad? I mean, in Chinese, we say lose their face. Do I feel lose their face when I speak wrong? You know, how do people view me? I think we view a lot. We put too much weight on how other people view us.
Taking it broader, do you think when you talk about these, you know, what's holding Asian women back, is it specific to Asian women that you see certain things that they're doing that are holding them back from being recognized for their executive potential?
Probably not exactly Asian woman. Asian woman in general, just more introvert than America. I mean, just from overall population perspective. But I know a lot of Chinese women are pretty strong in the career driven as well, even though they're a big portion of Chinese and Asian women still want to put a family first. I think that, I mean, there's nothing wrong when you choose family over a career, but when you choose career over family, and that's where I think that the Chinese woman just need to pay attention to what are the barriers that prevent you to be yourself.
So yeah,
I think it's critical.
You mentioned that you don't see any woman. I mean, it's rare to see a woman in your field. Do you ever feel moments of gender bias where the expectation is a man should be in your role? Or how did you manage that imposter syndrome?
I think naturally there's always a group of men in my field. I can tell you I don't see obviously in front of me of that. Right. Maybe there's something behind it. You know, it's hard to tell, but in front of it, they could not say it. And from that end, the part I just want to do is, in my eyes, I don't view people different. I don't view he's a man, I'm a woman. I don't view he's a, you know, Mexican, I'm Chinese, and here is America, right? So I don't view that. Where in my communication, in my interaction with everybody, I think I try to deliver that message as well. And maybe because of that mentality, somehow I don't see it a lot that strong.
Mm. And I think it just speaks to you having done that work to understand who you are. And so then it's like, you know, Yabing, you have an accent. So then did you ever come across like this woman? She has an accent and she's a woman and, you know, why is she in this executive role? Like, did you ever come face to face with that type of that discrimination or bias?
I would say what I saw more is whenever you have kind of like, what is the opportunity for Yabing, right? And of course they will come up, you know, communication. I mean, not only me, you can see a lot of women, a lot of Chinese when they're working in a tech company, you know, when they're trying to find their opportunities, communication, you know, like that. You know, remember I mentioned that when I talked to my boss, talking about executive presence, and we're figuring out, is that what you really meant is to improve my communication or anything like that? So I think from that angle that you will say, yeah, people are probably trying to say, hey, maybe communication, you know, can do better, which I still think, all right, doesn't matter how many years I'm here, I'm not, you know, I'm born here, you know, there are a lot of things for me to learn from a communication perspective. So I do pay attention to those things. So that one, right, kind of you can say obvious, but like I said, I have not directly seen people challenge me why you are in this position because you are Asian or why you are in this position because you have an accent. They may say that in the back.
Yabing, what do you know about yourself today that if you could go back and tell that other person that you were when you first arrived here and you felt uncomfortable, what would you tell them that who are you today?
Oh, that's a very good question. I was still very proud to say I'm, what do you call that? Chinese-born America. How do I say? Chinese-born American. I'm very passionate about life, about family, about work. I'm very, how do I say this, curious and to learn many, many things. And I'm very passionate about making a difference in the world together with others.
And we have achieved such success in your career. It's been astounding. And the pace of it has been great too. So with that being said, what is next for you?
I have not thought that far yet. Frankly, if I look back, you just said that. You both said it. I didn't realize that you just said my pace for the last couple of years was pretty, you know, good. Even look at that part. I know that I really want to make a big difference on HEB because this is their first officer on security and it's a big job on my end. I really want to make that happen. HEB has such a great brand and it really embedded into Texas culture. And I really want to be that part, you know, in a good way. So that is my next year's plan.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the stories on our podcast as much as we enjoy unveiling them to you. A lot of time and detailed editing goes into bringing these stories. A big thank you to our sponsor, Renica Digital. Renica Digital is a full-service digital marketing boutique offering cloud, web, app, and social media services. If interested in serving as an ally to help us continue bring stories to the spotlight, amazing Asian American woman trailblazers, please visit us at www.identityunveiled.org and reach out to us for sponsorship and donation opportunities. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram. Until next time, be safe and be well.